cold up here in Minnesota, North Dakota, where we are living. It's very cold, isn't it, Duke?
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. And it's also very cold in Tijuana right now.
Cold and wet and rainy. And, you know, for those of us up here where it's, you know, 30, 20, 10 degrees above, it's pretty cold. But there it's in the mid and low 50s, and it's very wet, and people don't have the clothing for 50-degree weather in the rain. You know?
It makes a big, big difference. I'm going to tell you all about it here on A Mexican Crossing Lines with Cindy Gomez-Shemp.
And Duke Gomez-Shemp.
You're listening to 88.1 FM, KPPPLP, Fargo-Moorhead, where we are adding local color to your airwaves. You can also find our past shows, updates about the caravan, and so much more that we cover here at 88.1 FM by going to kpppfm.com. You can also now subscribe to our YouTube channel, Duke1517. That guy right there,
that's
Duke.
Right, Duke1517. And I'm starting to do subtitles on some of the shows. So, you know, if you are an English speaker and you want to hear the Spanish shows, you can actually follow along with those. And I'll put Spanish subtitles on the English shows so we can have a broad audience of multiple languages. And mm-hmm. you can find it at kpppfm.com for our shows. But if you just go to YouTube just to watch just a video strictly, Duke1517, and please subscribe.
Also, thanks for all the information you have all been sending me about the whereabouts of the Standing Rock activists, protesters,
phonies.
Water protectors, phonies, that have inserted themselves into this migrant caravan crisis and that are traveling around the border area of our country right now, wreaking havoc for the caravan, for Mexicans and Mexico. I will be bringing you more information about them and what they're up to right now. But first, I want to thank everyone that has sent us your information. Also, please consider making a year-end donation to our station. We want to continue to bring you more great reporting. We want to expand what we do here at our studio at 88.1 FM. It's tax-deductible. Duke, how can they send us information and donate to our station?
Well, I'll start out with a donation first. To go to kpppfm.com and go to the donate tab, and you'll see that we're actual registered nonprofit, 501c nonprofit organization. So any donations are tax deductible. If you go to donate, it has a PayPal link. You can pay with a PayPal or credit cards, and also it has an address where you can mail a check. We'll be sending out all of our receipts towards the end of December, and you'll get a tax deductible receipt. Also, on that same site, you can just go to A Mexican Crossing Line under Programs, and you can look at the programs that we've been doing. It has an audio file on there in case you're driving and you want to listen to it. And it has video files that are connected to YouTube. You know, we take these Facebook Live videos, and we upload them to YouTube so they can be in high definition. And again, that's Duke1517 on YouTube. You can also call a number and, you know, leave us your voice message. You know, come on, call that number. We haven't had a call on that number for a couple days. It's 701-566-0917. Again, that's 701-566-0917. It's a message line. You can have up to 3 minutes. Sometimes people call and they give an opinion, and sometimes we play it on the show. You know, it's really up to you. You know, we won't just play something because you called, and people sometimes send information and say, don't mention me, and that's fine. You know, you can also let's see, you can tweet us at @media_PPP, and you can email Cindy at kpppfm.com or me, Duke, at kpppfm.com. And you follow us on Facebook, 88.1 FM Fargo-Moorhead. We have the People's Press Project Facebook page, and also Mexi-Can or Mexi-Can Online, which are a lot of the live tweets and the information about the caravan are going up on that page. And you can also find Cindy's public page at Cindy Gomez-Shemp.
That's right. So let me start by telling you the official count of migrants in the caravan at this point in Baja California, not all in Tijuana, but in Mexicali and in Tijuana combined, is right now around 8,800.
Wow.
As of this afternoon, because the numbers are continuing to go up,
yeah,
they're expecting that that number will swell to 10,000.
Wow.
Because there are some people that are on their way. It is unclear, however, how many of the remaining couple of thousand that are in Mexicali right now, mm-hmm, are going to decide they want to go to the to Tijuana, or they might decide that they want to stay.
Okay.
In Mexicali, at least around 500 people are considering staying in Mexicali. I don't know if y'all have ever been to Baja California, Tijuana, Ensenada, Mexicali. I have. It's gorgeous. Just saying. It's a place where a lot of expat Americans live. They choose to live there. It's so beautiful. Tijuana is hectic. It's a border town. It's also super dangerous. That's just my opinion. I think it's super dangerous there. But Mexicali, Ensenada, they're beautiful places. I can't blame the migrants if they decided that's where they wanted to hang out for, mm-hmm, a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that is a possibility. Around 500 of them are considering staying at that location. Last night, all day yesterday, it was raining. And Tijuana has a problem with its drainage of the water. They've had this problem for a while now. This is not something that happened because of the caravan being there. When it rains, it floods the streets because the drainage system is not working properly, and raw sewage backs up into the streets. They call them black waters, and they are literally just flowing through the streets.
Oh, boy.
The smell, I am told, is incredible.
Okay.
You saw the images yesterday of the streets running with black water.
Oh, yeah, and alongside the streets, filling up along the edges, and vehicles of halfway submerged. And it rained for a day and a half, and a lot of people were sleeping in tents or sleeping right on the sidewalks, you know, right in the parks and just on the line, out in the open. They were wrapped in, tarps, and they had tents, and the tents were leaking, and it just looked really, really horrible. And they were trying to move people to a new shelter, and some people were going, some people weren't. But the whole time, it was heavy downpour of rain, and not everybody has raincoats. Everybody has, like, short sleeves, shorts, and, you know, summer wear on, and they're out there soaked. They're out there soaked, and people were trying to give out clothing and blankets, but everything was getting wet, and it looked really, really horrible. And the water backing up. And before that, they really didn't have a problem with all so many humans in one spot. What do you do with the human waste? I mean, they were just ending up dumping buckets of pee and stuff right on the road to go down the drains. All that has come right back up with the backup of water.
It's kind of a nightmarish scenario, as you can imagine. So, but the Mexican authorities were scrambling, and I've brought you this update before. They were surveying a new location at El Barretal. It's an event center that has gone in disuse and disrepair. It was refurbished very quickly. They're still trying to get things set up for that. But El Barretal has a capacity for the numbers that are in the caravan and even the numbers that are coming. So not only that, it's two giant warehouses, as we showed, mm-hmm, in the pictures I showed you. If you want to follow at Mexican online on Facebook, or follow at @media_PPP on Twitter, you can get my updates up to the minute as I tweet them, as I post them, about what's going on in Mexico at the shelters. Also just caravan news updates on what's happening with them. So I was tweeting about this last night. I was sharing that the main event center that is now going to be the only shelter for all of these folks has roofs, whereas the Benito Juarez shelter, where they were originally located, which is going to be closed because of health concerns, the raw sewage, the rain. I mean, it's they're out in a field, open air, baseball field, no roof. They were in tents, tarps, you know, man-made structures with plastic and sometimes just with cloth. That situation becoming untenable, unhealthy, and a health risk. So it has been, the site has been condemned at this point. The porta potties, the water, the Marines have already moved to the new location. They're going to be serving meals there. The kitchen situation at the new shelter at the Barretal is still under construction. So I'm going to bring you updates on how all of that is looking. But I want to tell you, the scene last night was incredible because the rain was really coming down hard. There, it was windy and it was wet. Rain is expected through the weekend, mm-hmm. and temperatures are expected to fall to 5 centigrade. Do you want to do the math on that, Duke?
No, it's in the 50s.
Duke is like, no, I don't want to do the math on that.
No.
It's going to be really freaking cold for Tijuana, for caravan people, caravan goers, who had nothing but the clothes on their back mm-hmm. when they arrived. The tents that were handed out, the tents that you see in this, that were in this field, and many of which are still there today, were donated, were brought to the caravan people, the caravan goers. They did not come with tents. Mm-hmm. So, the frustrating part of what I saw last night was that there were many people refusing to leave for a variety of reasons. It's very disturbing. But last night, people were very quickly trying to transport 6,000 plus people to El Barretal.
In the rain.
In the rain. A large portion of the people that were at the Benito, now condemned Benito Juarez baseball field, which is serving as a temporary shelter, have been moved, did move, were moved. And the bus drivers and all sorts of other different transport vehicles, you know, there's combis, there's all sorts mm-hmm, of, mm-hmm. you know, smaller buses, bigger buses, oh, but yeah. all of these different privately owned, okay, privately owned and run bus companies, bus lines, bus drivers, and other transport vehicles came down there and donated 3 or 4 hours of their time in cycles to keep moving people and transporting them from one place to another. That it was, you know, it wasn't all government transport. In order to get this done, in order to do this quickly, yes, the Mexican authorities were providing transport, but a bunch of other privately owned company buses came on their own to assist and get this done very quickly.
Wow, that's great.
I know, it's amazing. And they took women and children, families, entire families first. They took them to the shelter first to get them out of the rain. Can you believe that despite this prioritization to keep the most vulnerable, the elderly, the sick, families, children, especially women and children, over to the Barretal, there were people with children, toddlers, small children, that refused to leave the inundated ball field.
Wow.
As people, as reporters and people were circulating in the rain during the evening, trying to get people's perspectives on what was going on, many of the folks that were being interviewed who decided that they would stay sounded like they were under the influence to me. Hmm. Now, I understand maybe that was part of their plan to keep warm. Who knows?
Yeah, yeah.
What I can say is that you would have to be out of your cotton, excuse me, you have to be out of your mind to do this because it's so cold out there. It was so cold that you would think that somebody convinced them to stay. Now, many people were convinced to stay, and they were misinformed in order to get them to stay. So folks were told, and this has been repeated by many people that were interviewed at the original site, that there was a woman, most of the people are describing what appears to be this, the same woman, who came to the camp with pictures on her cell phone of a prison in Tijuana, where she told the people at Benito Juarez shelter that they would be taken to. This is where you're going to be taken to.
Oh, okay.
This is where they're taking the people that are leaving here right now. So if you evacuate this site, you're going to go to jail. That's where they're going to take you. That is untrue, of course. El Barretal, as I told you, is a refurbished event center that has just been laying there. But, of course, it is roofed. There are three different floors with roofs for them to house all of these folks. There are other commercial sites that are completely open.
Mm-hmm.
So that means all of those commercial sites can now be used to set up medical facilities, immigration documentation stations, you know, all sorts of different services that need to be right on site. In Mexico, this is not playing very well to the locals who feel, some of them do, I guess, that they're getting a lot of help and attention and being catered to in a way that many Mexicans that are in need of migration or that are living in poverty in Mexico don't get. But what people really need to consider is that when you have a humanitarian crisis of this nature, and you have the conditions, cold, rain, raw sewage running through the streets, mm-hmm. you have the perfect conditions for an epidemic to break out of illnesses spreading in these closed quarters. Mm-hmm. And it is prudent of Mexican authorities to set up stations to treat, inoculate, and try to contain any health threats that would affect the entire city, not just the migrant caravan.
Mm-hmm.
So for their own safety and health, they're doing everything they can in Mexico, in Tijuana specifically, to ensure that the migrants are healthy, are safe, are you know, protected.
Yep.
I want to share some of the tweets that I put on my Mexican Online Facebook page. The caravan goers that are reluctant to go to this new location, many of them argue that out of sight means out of mind. If they're not at the border wall, the press will not, if they're not frequently at the border wall and or near enough to the border wall that they can join protests, which they continue to claim are going to continue happening, they will not be heard. They will not be pressuring Trump, and therefore they will have less chances of gaining asylum. That's one of the things that people are saying. In the other side of the border, in San Diego on Highway 8, there was a major crash last night. We have not confirmed yet because the Honduran embassy has to identify bodies at this point and say that they are Honduran nationals. But the other five Hondurans that were in the same accident and survived, three of whom are in critical condition out of those five that were injured and still remain alive, said they were all Honduran and said that they were all undocumented. What happened is that two coyotes, at this point, they're people smuggling people into the country, brought these 11 or 10 people in the back of this pickup truck. They laid them out like, you know, sardines.
Wow.
Hiding. They were hiding. They were laying down, okay? Mm-hmm. No seatbelts, folks. They're just laying in the back of the truck bed.
Yep, like cargo.
And the United States Border Patrol noticed. They saw this truck traveling at a high rate of speed. They went into a high-speed chase with this truck on Highway 8. They threw out those
Spikes.
Those spike strips.
Mm-hmm.
And the truck goes flying.
Oh, my goodness. The truck rolls.
The people, as you can imagine, were ejected all over the place. All of this in an effort to cross into the U.S. illegally. The two drivers are fine. They are not injured. They're alive. Well, I'm sure they sustained injuries, but they're not in critical condition or in the hospital like the people that were ejected from the truck. Those people will now be prosecuted, I'm sure, for not only smuggling in 10 people, but causing their death.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm horrified that the Border Patrol knew that they were smuggling people and the truck and decided to use what had to have been known by them to be a dangerous procedure to stop the vehicle.
Yeah, I don't understand it. You know, it's hard for me to make sense of doing that sort of tactic. You know, they'd, you know, that they would just, you know, have the truck flip, you know, and come under that sort of assault. You know, when you have in our community, when you have a high speed chase, they slow down. They try to track the person. They track the person until they can find them later. You know, they just follow, you know, but to go to that extent, it's like they're trying to prove themselves and make another message, but at the expense of killing people. I mean, that's just not acceptable.
So if you wonder, after seeing Trump put kids in cages, after all of the years that America, because Barack Obama did it too, put families, entire families, in detention centers with children. We put children in prisons here, not for crimes, just for coming here with their families, for being there, for being undocumented along with their parents. If the atrocities of putting those kids in cages, if the U.S. Border Patrol rubber bullet shooting and gassing people over the last weekend were not clear indicators to you that the United States, when it comes to immigrants crossing over into their country, are ruthless and they will go to any extent, even death, to stop them. You haven't been paying attention. Those who would encourage and or court that kind of danger, American activists, organizers, some of them former water protectors, are enticing people to their death. Look at the outcome. We were lucky that out of that 700 people that rushed the border, somebody wasn't maimed, seriously injured, or killed. There were children and women that were maced and pepper gas sprayed with pepper spray.
And tear gas.
And tear gas. Folks, these clashes and violent confrontations, the outcomes of which are going to be horrific, I predict will continue to happen as long as the caravan organizers continue to lie to and agitate the migrant caravan and keep them scared as they have been doing. I will bring you more updates as I learn more about that truck crash when I can. Also, I wanted to talk more about moving people from the old shelter to the new shelter, because last night, it was all day yesterday, as it became very apparent that the sprinkle was becoming a downpour and the field was becoming a swimming pool and was raw sewage running in the streets. It started to become very clear that they were not going to be able to maintain their adamant stance of staying no matter what. So they began to seed misinformation, doubt, and fear. One of the things that they were telling folks was that, as I said, they were going to be taken to prison. Don't get on a bus. Don't get on a plane. If folks that have been feeling desperate and decided they've been lied to long enough, they're tired of waiting for that moment when the international organizations and countries' ambassadors show up to offer them jobs and asylum, that ship has sailed. When they decide they want to try to find a way to repatriate back to their countries, They are mocked. They are shamed. Some of them are being threatened because they're told that people that are getting on buses and planes to be repatriated are disappearing.
Oh, boy.
That the Mexican government is putting them in jails and that they plan to keep them, like we do here in the United States, for months and possibly years. Of course, that's terrifying to people in the migrant caravan that don't know any better. But I am here to tell you there are no reports of any such thing happening. The organizers have lied to the migrants that are out there in that pouring rain because they feel that if they keep them scared and if they keep them all together, the organizers have more leverage in any action, in any protest.
Mm-hmm.
That way they can rush the border with more bodies. That way they can, you know, converge, block traffic, what have you. For example, I tweeted yesterday that there was going to be a hunger strike.
Mm-hmm.
I also tweeted yesterday that they were going to do a march from these people that were in the hunger strike to the border crossing. This, of course, raised a high alert among the federal police in Mexico and Border Patrol. In fact, there was talk of the border crossing being closed, which, as you know, is a huge economic
hardship
for both sides of the border. Anytime that that is announced, millions of dollars can be heard flushing down a toilet.
Exactly.
So people are terrified of the prospect of the border being closed because of this security threat. That is a piece of leverage that these Honduran migrant caravan goers, most of whom are Honduran, are counting on. If they can close down commerce, if they can interrupt transport for all of the people from the United States and Mexico that need to go across that border, on that border crossing in Tijuana, then they can get people's attention. And so that was one of the reasons why police and officials at the border were on high alert. However, it was very clear from the beginning that the group that was going to be going to the border was women only. Women, I think, you know, one of their organizer leaders and their children.
Hmm.
What I found interesting about this is that the federal police did not allow them to get to the border crossing.
Okay.
First of all, they stopped them. They stopped their little protest on their way there, turned them back around. Second of all, I watched the press conference. Do you remember me translating the press conference where they announced they were going on hunger strike?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember. Yeah.
Yesterday, it was 10 women that I said that were striking. It's actually 25 women.
Okay.
However, I have to say the details of the hunger strike are confusing because the people announcing the hunger strike were also confused about their own hunger strike.
Mm-hmm.
At first, they announced that there was going to be a hunger strike amongst the caravan goers, and they said that they were all doing it together in solidarity, and somebody asked the person making the announcement to the press, children also? And the person making the announcement said, yes, mothers and their children will be striking. They will be hunger striking together. Their husbands, their everybody's going to, you know, in solidarity. And one of the other organizers up on the podium, they were standing on the storefront of a cafeteria or some vegetarian business, something like that, called El Caracol, the snail.
Mm-hmm.
So the other person next to her looks at her like with crazy eyes, like, what did you just say? And then takes the microphone. She whispers something to her. And then the woman says, I'm going to let someone else talk.
Yeah, really.
And hands the microphone to the other lady. And the other lady goes, no, let me correct. Let me reiterate. We are hunger striking. It's going to be 25 women and 25 men.
Okay.
No children will be striking with us. And they were asked, you know, like, there's a shortage of food. People are getting rations. They're getting about 2 meals a day, one around 7:38-ish in the morning, another around 5:30-ish in the evening. And so, you know, people are hungry. The resources for that many people are just simply not enough. Having said that, there are lots of local churches, organizations, and American donations that are flowing across the border. People are showing up from a variety of different businesses all the time to bring food, drink, blankets, clothes. It's been pretty constant. So it's an amazing thing to see how people have had such great compassion to protect the migrants that are there. So that is one of the things that was kind of questionable, because having all of these people hunger strike in the midst of such a lack of resources was pretty astounding. And they were asked, aren't you scared? And they were like, no.
Yeah. Plus as an organizer, you know, to use a strategy of having a hunger strike, it's like, when I've seen these done in modern times, you know, I saw it in the 60s, like in a migrant farm workers movement, United Farm Workers United. You know, Cesar Chavez did a hunger strike, but he had Bobby Kennedy, Attorney General, candidate for president, at his side, giving attention towards the issue, because that's what the hunger strike was. And the idea behind a hunger strike, if someone's responsible for your life, they can't let you die. You know, if you're incarcerated and you go on a hunger strike, they're responsible to keep you alive. I thought that this is an odd strategy, an odd, you know, the tactic of going up and saying we're hunger striking. It's kind of like, I didn't think it was going to have any impact on anything, you know, and it was just like these people were going to be starving themselves and no one would be paying attention. So I thought it was a strategy coming from somewhere else. You know, it you know, I don't know for sure, but it's like a lot of these strategies aren't coming from the people. And a lot of these strategies seem American strategies, American organizing strategies, not the strategies I've seen in Central America and Mexico.
Yeah, they don't seem to check out. And I have a theory as to why somebody might want to encourage folks to do something like that.
Yeah.
And I think it very much has to do with, I can't see without my glasses.
Oh, well.
I think it has to do with the organizers and the rhetoric behind what they are trying to make this out to be. As I said yesterday, or the last time I did my show with all of you, as I said, there is something that's really sensationalist.
Okay.
About the way that they are characterizing what's happening to this caravan. You may recall that when they had the attempted border crossing over the weekend, some of these folks that I've been keeping track of were said to have been reporting a death of a child. You remember that, dude?
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
And so those are the kinds of tactics. Today, I'm actually trying to grab this and send it to you in Messenger so that you can add it to our show here. I know it's a pain, but I wanted to show this to you because to me, it just seems like it's all part of this tactic, which is to make things the most extreme possible situation. And I'm going to show you who's behind it and what they're saying in a minute. Okay, just sent you that. You should have it now. Okay.
There you go.
But first, I want to finish giving you the updates at the camp. So, a group of migrants was reported to have tried to swim across the border through the ocean at the border wall where, you know, how it goes into the ocean there at Playas, at the beach of Tijuana. Well, lifeguards were said to have had to be deployed to rescue the people or person that was in the water. There are varying reports. I'm going to show you how this has been sensationalized by the phonies that I have been tracking since Standing Rock. And what the real report is that one person ended up in the water, and that one person did cause lifeguards to go in and rescue them out of the freezing cold water. Remember, it was raining and windy last night, and then they recovered that person. That person is alive. There's no missing people. No more than that one person went in the water, although there were reports that there were possibly two of them. But there were also varying reports that said that there were up to 10 or 11 people drinking down at the beach when one of them decided to jump in. It is not known for sure whether or not it was really even an attempted border crossing. What's very clear is that the person that jumped in was drunk. Okay? What Lilith Sinclair, one of the people posting in Asylum Seeker Support Network, one of the people that is reposting Evan Duke, the guy that started the page and is the admin for Asylum Seeker Support Network and also Occupy ICE, one of the people that is promoting all of the folks from Standing Rock and all of the groups associated with them that are organizing, supporting, and helping to finance the caravan, had this to say about this attempted border crossing that is, again, unconfirmed.
Yeah.
They said, this is Lilith Sinclair's post, last night, an unconfirmed number of migrants attempted to cross the border along the beach in Tijuana into the United States via the ocean. That is not true. It's not confirmed that they were trying to cross the border. One person ended up in the water. They were retrieved. Remember that. She goes on, within a few minutes, there was a large police presence on both sides of the border wall. Lifeguards from Tijuana were only able to rescue one person. They were only rescuing one person because there was only one person in the water.
Mm-hmm.
At this time, there are no confirmed reports on how many people total attempted to swim to the United States. Yes, there are. It was only one person in the water, and we don't know if they were attempting to swim to United States. It is of the utmost importance that U.S. citizens realize the severity of need that asylum seekers are operating under. I ask every U.S. citizen that sees this to think of the town or small city you live in. Think about how unremarkable all the things and places and people you drive by every day are to you. Now, I want you to think about the fact that last night a number of people risked their lives and a few people lost their lives for the opportunity to live in an average U.S. town or city like yours. We as U.S. citizens cannot possibly fathom the desperation, fear, and need that would drive a person to drive into a freezing cold and unforgiving seabed in the middle of the night, knowing they will be surrounded by federal agents from two different countries if they can manage to survive. This is a humanitarian crisis. These people are simply human beings like anyone else, fleeing violence, poverty, starvation, and oppression, and willing to literally risk their lives to do so. Because in situations so dire, it's better to die trying than to live another day in hell. I ask you to keep all the migrants lost to sea in mind today as you go about an average day of life in the U.S. Think of the migrants here in Tijuana that we lost last night. And think of the migrants in the Mediterranean Sea drowning, trying to get to Europe. Think of people taking on the ocean in inflatable boats and ask yourself, how bad would life have to be for you to risk an overwhelmingly high possibility of death to get to Europe or the U.S.? And then ask yourself how you feel about abolishing borders and ending human migration being criminalized. Wow, what a load of crap.
Oh, boy.
I told you, and this has been reported by multiple news sources. That's the picture there of the police on both sides of the border, mm-hmm. and you know, the lifeguard, of course, that had to rescue this one person. I wouldn't say rescue. It was more like pull the drunk person out of the ocean. Okay? And by the way, it was just one person. No one is lost at sea.
Yeah.
No comparison to people that were refugees that died on the shores because they weren't allowed to land ashore.
Mm-hmm.
As we saw in the Mediterranean Sea that happened to Syrians.
Yeah.
This is not that. Stop trying to equate all of these imperialist Indians from Standing Rock that are joining into this conversation and these white people in America that don't know what the hell they're talking about when it comes to Mexico or Tijuana. Stop trying to compare the border wall, the border crisis, the migrant caravan, or migrating from Mexico into the United States to Palestine, to Syrian refugee. Mm-hmm. Please, the love of God, stop doing that. Stop sensationalizing. Stop comparing it to something it is not. It is its own unique thing, and you obviously don't know anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
These people are lying and misinforming folks in America and in the caravan to the detriment of everyone. This doesn't help anybody for them to lie about things like that. Get people all riled up and scared that people are going into the ocean and killing themselves, basically, because they're so desperate. The situation is not like that. Mm. The Mexican authorities are handling it, I think, beautifully.
Yeah.
I was like amazed at how well they're doing. So do you see the pattern here, Duke?
Oh, yeah.
Do you see the similarities?
Mm-hmm.
This is why these folks are doing it, because it gets people freaked out.
Yep.
And makes news. And guess what else it does? It brings in those dollars.
Oh, yeah, those GoFundMes are going and going and going and gone right now.
Now, I want to show you some pictures of the now sent. What's it called, Duke, when they close someplace? Condemned?
Condemned.
Yes, the now condemned location. They're still evacuating people from that site. But here is the old shelter now in the daylight after the long night of rain. As you can see, there are many tents and people still there. They're not being violently forced out. Nothing like what happened out in Standing Rock, mm-hmm. at the end where cops came in and arrested folks and all of that. So don't believe the hype of the hypesters that are going to come and try and tell you that nonsense. They are, however, evacuating the areas where there's human raw sewage laying all over the place and forcing people to move to a different location. They're welcome to go out on the sidewalk right outside of the field of mud where they were at, but they're mm-hmm. not allowed to stay inside of this location any longer. There's transport still available to the new location. A lot of folks now in the light of day, having heard from their caravan compatriots that have come back from the other, many of them were brought back in taxi or brought back by the law enforcement to, even last night, they were bringing people, they took people, entire families, all the way out to the shelter to survey the location and then brought them back
mm-hmm.
to have them tell the other caravan goers where they were taken, what they saw, what's the conditions of the place. So that's what really made for the push that people were like, oh, they're not lying to us. They're really taking us to a safe location. There's roofs, the showers there. Like, there's stuff, there's things there we don't have here. Do you know how long these folks have been out here without showering, without access to a shower, except for the one that they got last night from God?
Oh, yeah.
It's been a while. Some of those people are probably pretty rank, you know, so... the fact that they're going to be able to go to a location that has roofs, that has floors, there's concrete, even the big square that's behind the giant warehouse that is adjacent to another smaller warehouse, both of which can hold thousands of people, There's a giant square with open air above it. I think that could be a spot for overflow when it's not raining, but even that is cement ground. It's not mud. It's not going to be mud if it rains there. So the conditions are much, much better at the new shelter. You can also see that there's still a lot of kids out at the old shelter site. I mean, look at these pictures from the Benito Juarez location. These were just taken today, and you can see that there's tents, people's clothes, people's belongings still out there. Here's some folks. Look at the number of shelters and tents there still. That's a lot of folks. In the daylight, when I was watching the videos last night, the downpour, it was just the mud, the water, like, it was so awful. I could hear children crying in the rain. And I kept thinking to myself, where's this baby? Where is this baby out in this rain? And why are they not taking it to the other location? I never imagined that there was more than one person that would do that to their kid. But there was. In the daylight, there's all sorts of kids. Can you imagine how scared and manipulated these folks have to be to have decided to stay out in this cold, freezing weather with their kids? And I blame it on the misinformation that has been handed out to the caravan goers, because they've been telling them all sorts of nonsense, that they're going to be taken to prisons, they're going to be disappeared, they're going to, you know, be harmed in some way that they'll never get heard by Trump now. They've been circulating this nonsense about Christmas and about how important Christmas is to Americans, about how important it is, like, in America, they've told these folks, in America, around Christmas time, everyone gets presents. Everyone, like, they find a way, they collect money, the cops, the government, everybody collects money, and they make sure. It's just, it's so important that you treat people well. We have a window. We have a window to get our Christmas miracle. And Trump will give people asylum for Christmas. That's what you're going to get from Santa for Christmas. Wow. But you got to hang out, and you got to do the protesting, and you got to stay visible. If you move, if you go to the other location, we're done for. What I explained to you folks is that, did you show all of the old shelter pictures?
Yep, I did.
what I can tell you about the reality of that is that I don't think, first of all, I don't think Trump cares about the caravan, the children being there. He doesn't care about gassing children and women. I don't even think he believes in Christmas.
No. And the idea that there's going to be all this compassion from Trump, first of all, and also from people from the United States, you know, it's not true. They've been sold a bill of goods when it comes to, you know, this idea that there's this compassion that pours out. And, you know, we have compassion, you know, but not in our policies, not in their everyday actions. I've actually been amazed when I've met other immigrants in this community, and they'll talk about how people here need to realize this is happening and they'll definitely help us in this cause. And I'm like, you haven't lived here long. People don't care about other people, especially people from other countries, you know, and that all of a sudden they'll let people in. They were told that going here. And when they end up here on the border, they can't cross. You know, they were sold a bill of goods, and none of that stuff is true. So, you know, they're believing in these myths that they're being told. And the people that are doing that are the people that are manipulating them. They're the people who actually brought them all to one spot in the first place. It was a terrible idea. But with this strategy that, of course, they'll open the gates and people will come in. What, to end up in detention centers for 2 or 3 years? I mean, that's what will happen. It's not like they're going to build housing for a bunch of people and hire a bunch of people for work. They're going to put them in prisons in the United States.
Well, let me tell you, out at the Benito Juarez sports field that served as temporary shelter until today when they're shutting it down, they had set up a whole system out there. They had these water tanks out there for the folks, porta potties. They had medical tents set up. They were inoculating people. They were providing people with health care, dental care, emotional psychiatric support, medicines. They were giving out donations. They set up a kitchen. The Marines were feeding people out there, mm-hmm. including the police and the service members that are out there. So all of that is now being moved to the new location, which means it will not exist at the sports field anymore. Mm-hmm. Folks who decide against all the advice that has been given to them by the Mexican authorities to move to the other location are going to have to, as we say in Spanish, rascarse con sus propias uñas. Going to have to scratch themselves with their own nails.
Okay.
Because there isn't nobody from the government. And, you know, people will probably still go out there and give them donations or help them out. Now I'm going to show you the new shelter. This is what the new shelter location looks like. It's a very, very big area. There's a huge parking lot. And so the street on the outside of the Benito Juarez sports field, that entire street was kind of a place of convergence for people going in and out, and a place where they set up a lot of the, you know, the tents mm-hmm. that served at the migrant camp. Now that is this giant parking lot. Yeah. So you've got all sorts of tents that you can see popped up there. Mm-hmm. The Marines are set up. Is that our first? You went to shelter?
Yeah, because this first one is just...
Oh, and let me share that this is a vehicle that pulled up during there's a long line of people that are waiting to eat in another one of these pictures. Mm-hmm. The kitchen has not yet been completely set up inside. So the Marines are having to feed these folks. They're very modest meals. I told you they get two of them a day. They consist mostly of rice, beans, tuna fish, mm-hmm. you know, modest meals. They are having to ration them. They have 6,000 plus people. But as you can see in this photo, there are vehicles showing up, you know, pretty regularly with pizzas, drinks. Here you see them opening a case of soda and a case of some juice. And the man is handing out slices of pizza. You can see him handing out a slice there.
Yep.
It was crazy.
Yeah, here's also the pizza line.
That's the line for the Marine food.
Oh, okay.
It was all the way out into the road. It's so long. So a lot of people ran from this line and ran and got in line next to the pizza car. And it's funny because I was watching the live stream of this reporter, Alfredo Alvarez, as he goes out to the street and he's just kind of like, you know, making the rounds, giving people a tour, letting people see what's going on there. And another car pulls up and he's like, I got 16 Little Caesars pizzas.
Yeah.
And he tells him, you should just set up here. Don't even drive into the parking lot because there's so many lines going on in there.
Yeah.
Because there was. So then he calls over the people. He's like, all he had to do is like say, pizza over here.
Yeah, pizza,
and
pizza.
I mean, there was a stampede of people from the migrant caravan that were running down there to form a line to get pizza. So this is just, you know, it was like a revolving door. Mm-hmm. Cars kept pulling up with donations. Cars continue to pull up with food and drink and clothes, etc. So that is the new facility.
Yep.
As you can see, it's clean. It looks very orderly. Things mm-hmm. are much better for them at this new location. We don't have all of the raw sewage on the ground. There's yep. not, they don't need to have tents. None of that stuff is going on. They're going to be inside. They're going to be sheltered. They're going to have access to bathrooms and showers, and it's going to be great.
Yeah, and it's also located in kind of a different district, that there's commercial and residential, and there's a road right by it. And whereas the other shelter, basically, it was right next to the border, and people just spreading out all over the place.
Yeah.
Here, it's got enough room that it can be contained into the warehouse parking lot, the open space. They have space where people can, you know, coalesce.
And the commercial buildings.
Yeah, you know, and the commercial buildings, which have infrastructure, which then they can set up different things using that infrastructure. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a much better deal. It's like trying to take care of thousands of people that are in one spot. And the other place was just, it was just not working. It was flooding, and it was very dangerous for people. So it was a move for safety, a move for more comfort. And it's, you know, it's not that comfortable if you have to sit in an open shelter all day long. Well, you may be waiting there for months. You may be there for months if you're filing for asylum. If you're deciding what you're going to do, you're going to be there a while. So I think it was smart that they set that up. But the reporter was saying that the people in that area have to get used to it. They're like, oh my God, you know, we have a whole bunch. We have thousands of people new in our neighborhood. And there's people on the street. In fact, there's, different things going on, like this young man.
Yeah, there's a bunch of them out there, actually. You know,
hanging along the street and asking for money.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, I don't know. I'm not going to judge that, but it's like...
He said they're not stealing.
They're not stealing.
Nope.
They can't work.
They can't work,
you
right
know,
now.
And they only get two meals a day. You know, what's a person going to do? So, you know, the neighborhood is getting used to the cars driving by where, you know, young people will say, hey, you know, can I have some money? And that sort of thing, you know?
I want to make this appeal to people that are in that migrant caravan that feel that they're going to become invisible. I feel they were more invisible when they were in the field because they were inside of an enclosure, right?
Mm-hmm.
And here they will be too because they're going to be inside of a building. But they were the only access road was literally filled with overflow tents, mm-hmm. and then of course they had all the canopies for the Marines and the food, for the medical, for all of the things that were set up outside. So there was no immediate traffic that was passing by. You would have to go quite a ways in order to reach a main thoroughfare where you could attract attention from the public driving by.
Mm-hmm.
If these folks want to protest and attract the attention of the people there, they don't have to go very far, and they're going to have a steady stream of heavy traffic at this location. So I think that is a benefit.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, there is very efficient public transportation in Mexico everywhere.
That's true.
And it's not expensive.
No.
It's cheap.
Mm-hmm.
How much was it for the subway to get from one place to another in Mexico? So like
30 cents, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
buses are not that much more.
Mm-hmm.
Prices do not vary very much across the country. So I'm telling you, I think that these folks will have a much better time at the new shelter location. Also, I wanted to share that there are many people that are afraid of the new shelter because they feel that people will forget about their campaign, that they will forget about the migrant caravan. I don't know why folks that are organizers in this caravan are telling people that, because it is literally at the top of everyone's list in terms of the news right now. Other than perhaps maybe Cohen pleading guilty and implicating the president, other than the Manafort lying to Mueller stuff, other than shakeup at the White House and the obvious connections to Russia and Putin now, this is, it's still front and center, believe me. So people are not going to forget about what's happening with the migrant caravan. Not that anybody that is, you know, promoting the caravan would allow us to do that, because they've got plenty of people down there sensationalizing a lot of what is happening.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you have to keep it here on a Mexican Crossing Lines, so you get the real skinny.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that rains are still expected through the weekend. Heavy rains will be expected, and as you know, for almost any place else, that wouldn't be a major issue, but for Tijuana, it means flooding and raw sewage in the streets.
Oh, boy.
We know now that many of the people in the caravan were brought here under false pretenses. Many of them were told that there was going to be a variety of countries waiting for them and people offering them asylum and people offering them work in the United States and even places to stay until they got on their feet. This has been confirmed by a number of the people in the caravan. What's new is that many of them are now confessing that they were paid to join.
Hmm.
They were given some money if they agreed to come along. Many of these folks were already indigent. Many of them were close to it. They didn't have a whole lot. But what they did have, they sold. They literally did not expect to be returning. They've got nothing to go back home for. You're listening to 88.1 FM, KPPPLP, Fargo, Moorhead, where we are adding local color to your airwaves. I think it's very cruel of the people that organized this to put people in harm's way the way that they have, under false pretenses, because those folks had expectations. And I think that's exactly why they have behaved the way in which they have behaved and come off to the Mexican public and the authorities as if they are ungrateful. It's not that they're ungrateful, it's that they were lied to. They were deceived. They had expectations that were unfulfilled, and they still remain unfulfilled. What that is causing now is that many people who are finally having, you know, their come to Jesus moment are deciding, are having to make the difficult decision. Do I want to go home or do I want to stay? And here's where you can separate the wheat from the chaff, Duke.
Okay.
Because we heard a lot of these folks in the press conference messaging that they are not here because they were starving back home and couldn't get jobs. They're here because they're about to die. If they go back there, they're going to get killed. Yeah. They're here because they're in a lot, they're fleeing violence and danger. A lot of those folks, by the hundreds now, are deciding, hey, this isn't what I signed up for. I want to go home.
Yeah.
So it begs the question, how much of that was bravado, bluster, exaggeration? How much exaggeration has there been about the, you know, life and death situations that would allow folks to apply for asylum when so many people are going, wait a minute, we're not going to get asylum automatically. We're going to have to possibly wait here for months. And then maybe then, not even then, will we get asylum?
Yep.
I'm going to go home.
Yeah,
if I knew this was happening, I would not be here.
I wouldn't have come in the first place. You know, like, like we were going over the asylum numbers and the non-ability to process so many people and not having staff. You know, you would need hundreds more staff every day to actually take in applications. And then the last report that I heard just a couple of days ago was that the United States will not even be able to start processing these applications for like 5 weeks. And they're totally backlogged. And in those applications, only 9% actually get approved. You know, so 9 out of 100 actually get approved. And for the person to make their case, you know, it's not just like they sign it off and they stamp it. There has to be a hearing. There has to be information presented to a judge. There has to be evidence. There has to be cooperation on, you know, this is true, that the person is in imminent danger of death and dismemberment if they went back to their country to be even considered. And that information is getting to people in the caravan. So that's why they're saying, well, wait a minute. That's not what we were told. We were told we just all show up there. We all march in. We get asylum, and there's going to be a representative from France, one from Canada, the United States. They're going to take us in, and we're going to, you know, have a better life. You know, it's just going to be easy peasy. You know, that's why we're all going to one spot, or it's all going to go in. You know, they're realizing they've been lied to. So they don't know what to believe. So when they say we're moving to another shelter or they'll take you home, people are like, I don't know. I don't know who to believe or what to believe anymore.
Well, what you can believe is the statistics, and they've always been pretty, the numbers of people that actually are given asylum hovers around 7%, Duke.
Okay, it's even less than 9.
It's very small. I mean, well, the criteria for someone to get asylum is very extreme danger.
Mm-hmm.
And very few people actually fit the bill.
Yeah.
For the criteria. Most of those who are given asylum in the United States are fleeing religious persecution, political persecution. Mm-hmm. You know, they've spoken out against the president, or, you know, they're some kind of dissident that the government of some country that has a dictator or something wants to kill, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And also, and this is interesting, given the report I did on Pitaya Queen and why Americans and community members of the people that are part of this asylum seeker support caravan support network have been pushing the LGBTQIA caravan more so than others, is because one of the categories that gets asylum is LGBTQIA persecution.
Okay, yeah.
So I think that is one of the reasons why they are pressing that one. But for the most part, the rest of the people that are in that caravan are probably not going to meet that criteria. The vast majority of the people in the caravan are not going to be able to request asylum. That does not mean that they have to go home, mm-hmm. but many are choosing to do just that. Groups of around 50 to 100 per day are now leaving, putting the organizers of this caravan into a frenzy. Their numbers and also their leverage, where they could just rush the border at any moment, is going to dissipate. So they are trying to, by hook or crook, make these people so afraid that they will not leave the caravan under any circumstances. So I wanted to tell you that the now condemned ball field and shelter is closed. Resistors have taken to the streets to avoid having to go to the new location. Also, I want you to know that people that have decided to stay, over 2,000 migrants in that caravan have now applied for visas in Mexico and are currently awaiting their paperwork.
Yeah.
Are currently awaiting their visas. What do you think of that, Duke?
Well, you know, again, it's like there's quite a bit of misinformation, but also there's some good things that are happening. I think the Mexican government and officials have responded to a crisis and have looked for ways, because they're dealing with a whole bunch of human beings, and they're looking for ways to process people and give them options, you know, and keep them safe. And you know, they didn't plan this. They ended up with this problem, and they're dealing with it. And I think they're dealing with it with a good way, and that they actually, what I like is that people have some choices. I mean, well, they have some choices.
People,
you know?
People have only been there for around a little over a week, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And they began processing their requests for those of them that wanted to try and get work visas and stay in the country. Right away, 600 plus people have already gotten their work visas and are already working.
They're already working right now.
Yes.
Wow, that's amazing. That sort of response is immediate response. And
yes!
And get people, you know, the information, get them down, get them registered. And then, you know, I'm sure it's not a cushy job, not making much money, but it's better than sitting in a shelter, getting fed twice a day and just sitting around, not knowing where you're going to end up. At least it gives someone direction and something better than, you know, what they're facing right now.
There has been tragedies. 10 people were in that accident, attempting to cross the border in that vehicle. And of course, as I told you, three of those people have died. They're believed to be Honduran immigrants that are undocumented that tried to illegally cross in the back of a flatbed truck. Five of them are in the hospital with three of those people in critical condition. And there was another accident last night.
Hmm.
There was one of the people that got a work visa that was working legally in the country was doing road construction work.
Okay.
When there was a bunch of earth, they were doing drainage work.
Okay.
In the street inside of this hole, and a bunch of dirt collapsed on them, basically entombing them under the dirt. There was nothing that could be done to try to save them by the time that they were reached. And of course, you know, there was all the rain.
Mm-hmm.
So they were dead.
Wow.
One of the two that were killed in that horrible street construction, drainage construction accident was one of the recent caravan workers that arrived in May. This is from the previous caravan that arrived in May.
Okay.
Yeah, sadly. So there are some casualties to report that are real, but they don't have anything to do with people trying to cross the border. like they told you about a dead girl
being,
you know, hit with the gas canister by the Border Patrol. That was not true. That never happened. She is not in critical condition. You heard any of the phonies talk about that anymore?
Oh, yeah.
Oh. She just disappeared. Little girl disappeared. How about if the people at sea, the dead people at sea, wonder if they'll talk about them again? Because I am debunking right now. Mm-hmm. That story is a bunch of hogwash. And finally, I want to tell you what else these folks are up to. I saw a video of Evan Duke and Myron Dewey up on the San Isidro Bridge talking about what they were going to be here for a while and telling people how to donate and how to help and go to Asylum Seekers Caravan Support Network page where they're coordinating all of these folks to keep the caravan going, keep this situation going as long as they possibly can, and that they would be there on the ground. And then immediately they took off the next day.
Yep.
They were driving through Arizona. And here they are talking about what they're going to do. Pay very close attention to these dangerous charlatans. Myron Dewey is known to have been a womanizer that was abusive to women. Evan Duke is a dangerous person. He's one of those people that with Antifa that I showed you was running around, getting into violent clashes at different protests against Nazis. These things are orchestrated for show and for attention and for media and for press. Now they're going to set up camps in Texas and Arizona.
Wow.
They say they're breaking ground November 30th. They're going to build the first of a network of indigenous-led activist villages supporting asylum seekers and indigenous communities along the U.S.-Mexican border. Dear God, help us all.
Yeah.
The Somi Sec Village Base Camp, a permanent, semi-permanent community, which is going to be on 30 acres of private land outside Floresville, Texas. My people in Texas, please hear me. Find where these folks are. Make sure that you let the law enforcement, Border Patrol authorities know, because I suspect that these people are going to try to illegally cross people over the border, and they're probably going to get people injured or killed, like the two guys that tried to cross the people in the flatbed back of their flatbed truck.
That's right.
Just did. Their mission, according to Evan Duke, is to provide long-term support for asylum seekers, indigenous people, communities, wildlife, and water. The village will serve as a staging area for support, defense, and observation in the region, as well as foster a culture of resistance to the growing militarism of the government of the United States. Their regions, the cities where they were going to put forward posts, will be in Laredo, McAllen, El Paso, and Brownsville, Texas.
Wow.
And the person, Lilith Sinclair, that is tagged down there is the lady that was putting out that false post about the drowned immigrants and the immigrants at sea. That's her.
Okay.
She's tagged in there because I'm showing you they're all connected. And it says that these indigenous-led communities will be in partnership with, the veterans. Wesley Clark Jr. coming out of his hidey hole to go and scam some more people in Texas now?
Yep.
Water protectors, you know what that means. They're going to have Ed Higgins here.
Yep.
And all those other phonies from Standing Rock fame, like Louis Monsivais, the stuntman for Machete?
Yep. That guy.
Environmental and social justice activists. Oh, that means the burners like Lolly B will be out there doing yoga.
Oh, yeah.
And other organizers that will host and support a rotation of incoming activists who seek to learn, teach, and participate in direct action. These are camps for people that crave activism but don't know what to do with themselves. And they're going to use Mexicans and the migrants in this caravan, which they have manufactured, which they have been funding to support their habit.
Mm-hmm.
They need to protect and save people. And by golly, they're going to do it whether or not you want them to.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, they will manufacture a crisis out of thin air and then try and attempt to solve it.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, as we have seen since Standing Rock, they're not very good at that. These are some of the most incompetent and dangerous people I have ever met.
Mm-hmm.
Here's Evan talking very irresponsibly. This is a post he put out today. Look at what he is comparing the camps where the people are right now. I've just showed you the old camp, which is now closed because of health reasons. Mm-hmm. So people can no longer stay there.
Yeah.
I've showed you the new camp where they have very clean conditions, where they have kitchens being set up as we speak, where they have showers, where they have enclosures, roofs over their heads, all of that good stuff. This is what Evan Duke is saying about this. Look at the sensationalism with which these folks want to talk about this camp. Argel-sur-Mer is a pleasant little seaside town in the south of France. Today, he says, it's a magnet for sun worshiping holiday makers, but in 1939, it was the site of a refugee camp for Spanish anti-fascists and civilians who fled General Franco's forces at the end of the Civil War. There was little shelter and no sanitary facilities, but 100,000 people were crammed onto a beach enclosed by fencing. Thousands died, the biggest killers being dysentery and hypothermia. Thousands more died young over the intervening decades from maladies related to their internment. Argel-sur-Mer is a pleasant little seaside town in the south of France. Oh, that's the same thing. Sorry, he quoted that.
I see.
This is what he is comparing the camp where the migrants are staying to. He's comparing it to an internment camp, yeah, to a concentration camp with deplorable conditions that led to the death of many of the people. That is their messaging. That is what they want you to believe. And it's simply just not the case. So I just wanted to bring you those updates really quick today because there's more nonsense going on than you can shake a stick at, and we have to keep track of it. Make sure and follow me at Mexican online on Facebook, at MediaScore_PPP on Twitter, and at Duke1517 on YouTube. Subscribe, yep. Hit the little subscribe button so you can get notifications of every single one of our updates. Thank you for being with us here on A Mexican Crossing Lines. Y buenas noches.